The Geology Assistant by Larry Vardaman. Never volunteer to be a geology assistant. Why? Because the geology assistant carries all the rocks. Slick brochures for geology summer camp don't reveal that first-year geology students serve as slave labor to the real geologists who carry the rock hammer. Geology camp recruiters use beautiful images of mountains and valleys and scenic vistas to lure prospective geology assistants into lugging 50 pounds of rocks in their backpacks, collected by the geologist, across miles of hot, dusty terrain. At least that's the conclusion I reached by the end of the day that I served as the geology assistant to Dr. Andrew Snelling. We were on a field trip in the summer of 2002 for the RATE project, Radioisotopes in the Age of the Earth, to collect rock samples along the 7-mile trail in Yosemite National Park. We were collecting a sequence of granite samples containing radio halos from the top of the canyon near Glacier Point to the valley floor and from west to east across the park. Granite samples had been collected from many other locations around the world for the RATE project, and Yosemite would contribute important data to our effort to document a process we coined accelerated decay. The RATE project concluded from several lines of evidence, including the unique characteristics of radio halos in granite, that the age of the Earth is thousands, not billions of years old. Andrew and his wife Kim traveled from Australia to Arizona to participate in a Grand Canyon tour and later joined my wife Jeanette and me for 3 days in Yosemite. Our visit occurred during the 4th of July celebrations in the park. That's another thing you should never do. Drive in Yosemite Valley on the 4th of July. The traffic is bumper to bumper on the valley floor and moves at a snail's pace. The four of us stayed at the historic Wawona Hotel near the south entrance to the park. President Teddy Roosevelt stayed in this same hotel during his visit to meet John Muir, the person most responsible for preserving the region as a national park. The grounds of the hotel were decorated gaily with flags and red and white bunting. A barbecue with hundreds of people seated at tables on the grounds rendered the old wooden hotel into the era of the 1800s. But our business in the park was to obtain rock samples, so our wives drove us to the trailhead at Glacier Point, where the four of us viewed one of my favorite panoramas anywhere in the world. There is the drama of a 3,000-foot drop-off to the valley floor directly below, the Yosemite Canyon stretching 20 miles from the west past Glacier Point and eastward 30 miles over bare granite to Tuolumne Meadows near the crest of the Sierras. Vertical rock walls, the length of the canyon directly across from Glacier Point. Waterfalls hundreds of feet high to the left, to the right, and across the valley. And Half Dome, the magnificent granite monolith only a short distance across the Y in the valley to the right. Quietly observing the millions of tourists who visit this overlook each year from just inside the railing was a 1,000-year-old juniper tree growing from a crack in the rock. This famous stunted tree, bent in a horizontal position, was made even more famous by a black and white photograph published by Ansel Adams. It died several years ago, leaving Glacier Point strangely mute. We asked our wives to drop us off with the intention to pick us up at the bottom some 4 hours later. Unfortunately, because of the heavy holiday traffic, the normal 2-hour drive took 6. But the intrepid geologists were oblivious to the mundane matters of traffic congestion while rocks awaited our investigation. Andrew had the rock hammer, which along with his Ph.D. in geology, a permit from the National Park Service to collect samples, a geological map, and a global positioning satellite receiver to locate our position within 6 feet, made him the leader. My trusty backpack with room to transport up to 50 pounds of rock made me the follower. My PhD in atmospheric science carried no weight on this expedition, except possibly for an early warning of pending inclement weather. We intended to hike down the south wall of Yosemite Valley and collect fresh fist-sized granite samples every 100 yards or so. We were provided with written instructions by the National Park Service as part of our permit how to avoid alerting other hikers on the trail to our secret mission of desecrating public land. Andrew was to keep his rock hammer hidden from the public at all times. We were to avoid collecting samples or making hammering sounds that other hikers could see or hear as they walked along the trail. And we were not to leave any traces along the trail that left evidence we had collected samples. Several years later, when attempting to obtain permission to collect rock samples in Grand Canyon, Dr. Snelling had been denied a permit to collect rock samples. This denial was in response to pressure from anti-young earth groups and officials at the National Park Service. The reason for the denial was not for inappropriate collecting practices, because young earth creationists have gone the extra mile to maintain quality, professional sample collecting practices. It was due to simple bias against young earth creationists using the park. It took threats of a lawsuit to restore the freedom for creation scientists to have access to the Grand Canyon. In addition to carrying the rocks, my second assignment as geology assistant was to be the lookout for our clandestine operation. I was to keep an eye out for interlopers up and down the trail and warn Andrew if anyone got close enough to hear or see our extraction of rock samples. We felt like cat burglars, sneaking along the trail and through the woods. The purpose of hiding the authorized collection was to not discourage unauthorized collecting by the public. According to public law, collection of any object, whether plant, animal, mineral, or artifact in a national park, is illegal unless authorized by an appropriate federal official. So down the trail we bounded. We had 7 miles to hike in 4 hours, including the time for stops along the way to select a sample from an outcrop which was not weathered, covered by vegetation, or too obvious from the trail. We stopped every 100 yards or so to consider a collection site. Andrew would use his rock hammer to break off a piece of granite about the size of a clenched fist, place it in a Ziploc bag, mark the bag with a sample number and hand it to me for storage in my backpack. Then he would use his GPS, Global Positioning Satellite Receiver, to locate the latitude, longitude, and elevation of the collection site. And finally, he would document all the specifics of the sample in a notebook, including a description of the site, a photograph of the site, and its position on his geological map. So you can see why he got paid the big bucks. We worked our way down the trail, and after taking a short break for lunch, found ourselves eventually walking on less inclined terrain. As the ground became flatter, I began to realize my backpack contained a progressively heavier load. I counted the number of plastic bags and was surprised to find over 2 dozen samples. At about 2 pounds apiece, I was approaching the normal weight carried by a fully equipped Marine, and we still had about 2 miles to go to meet our wives. Most novice hikers and backpackers think that hiking uphill with a heavy load is harder than hiking down. However, those who carried heavy loads both ways know what happens to your legs and feet on a downward trek with a heavy pack. Your knees take most of the abuse, followed by your toes being crammed into the front of your boots with each step. And finally, your lower legs turn to jelly and begin to quiver uncontrollably if you don't take more and more breaks. On the day after such a strenuous hike, it may take hours to get your legs to function properly again if you haven't exercised for several weeks prior to the hike. Hey, I had prepared for this. I had walked at least a mile in the preceding week. When Andrew and I reached the valley floor and located the place where our wives were to meet us, we found a constant stream of traffic. We had completed our mission, but arrived about a half hour late to the rendezvous. As we waited, we became concerned that Jeanette and Kim may have thought they missed us and drove somewhere else to look for us. But that wasn't the case at all. It turned out they had gone into the Yosemite Village area and got trapped in the 4th of July traffic. It was so bad they had no time to shop. You know it's bad when your wife doesn't shop. Once they returned to pick us up, 90 minutes late, they reported heavy traffic throughout the entire valley. Don't go to Yosemite on the 4th. The granite samples collected at Yosemite that year contributed to an entirely new understanding of Earth history. Radio halos embedded in the black mica specks of the granite we collected left telltale features that showed the rocks in Yosemite and around the Earth are not billions of years old, but thousands. This revolutionary finding is a magnificent validation that the Bible is reliable when it says Adam, the first man on Earth, lived just a few thousand years ago. An interesting corollary finding was that the massive exposure of granite in the cliffs, domes, and mountains of Yosemite cooled from hot molten magma in just a matter of days, not millennia. Can you imagine how earth-shaking such a transformation in the view of world history would occur if these conclusions were fully accepted?